Welcome into another edition of the Podium Game Podcast. I'm Brian Gibberman, joined by Sean Hyken from NBC Sports ProBasketballTalk.com, and he's also a Bulls columnist for Bleacher Report. Sean, how you doing today?
I'm good. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. First, we're going to get into all Bulls stuff. Two things we need to touch on first. Do you have anything on either of the websites you want people to know about?
Not anything particular right now, but I am pretty regularly both places. I do Bulls stuff at Bleacher Report. I do general NBA stuff at NBC on the Pro Basketball Talk blog. But, yeah.
All right. So go to those two places, as we both mentioned, and you can see the stuff Sean does. Secondly, what was it like emotionally for you last night with Swaggy P coming back?
Well, I think the fact that the Lakers are 1-0 on the season with Swaggy P in the rotation kind of speaks for itself. He's really the key to their season. If they want to save their season, they need to start him and put Kobe as the sixth man. I think that's really just the hierarchy of it at this point.
I can't argue with it one bit. All right, let's go to Bulls stuff. First, just some... They beat the Clippers on Monday. I went back and watched the game last night. It kind of felt like that was more the Clippers imploding than the Bulls taking it. You think that's fair?
Well, I think anytime the Clippers lose at home to a Bulls team that not only doesn't have Derrick Rose but also doesn't have Pau Gasol, there are kind of problems there. I mean, everybody talks all the time about the wing defense being an issue for the Clippers, and that certainly is. But the other thing is that Blake Griffin really just has not looked like himself so far this season.
Yeah, when they fell apart in the third quarter, it was Blake had a charge. He threw the ball out of bounds. Like, he was a big reason that the momentum in that game kind of swung in the Bulls' direction. Why are the Bulls on a 7-game road trip right now?
Well, they have this, there's a circus that has a run at the United Center every November.
Okay, I figured.
So it's the circus, like you know how the Lakers have the Grammy road trip every year, the Bulls have the circus trip. And this, like, it's like the Spurs have the rodeo trip. It's like that. They have a road trip around this time every year.
Okay, I figured it was something like that. I just wasn't sure what it does. One other thing I caught in that game, does Aaron Brooks always take running one-handed hook shots?
He likes the running one-handed hook shots. He likes to take a lot of different kinds of shots. He's actually been a lot better than I thought he was going to be. He's sort of in the mold. Like, I don't know what it is about Thibodeau, and I've tried to ask a few guys about this, but nobody really has any answers. But they, really, you look back, they had Nate Robinson a few years ago, and then they had DJ Augustine last year, who even Thibodeau basically said saved their season, and now they've got Aaron Brooks. Like, they always are able to get good play out of these small, athletic point guards.
Even a guy like John Lucas III had some success. Yeah, someone wrote a story about it, and I read it, and it was pretty good. I forget who did it. They play the Kings tonight. Who are they going to use to guard Boogie? Because we saw in the Wizards playoff series when Noah guarded Nene, that's the kind of guy he could struggle a little bit with.
Right. They'll probably, I mean, assuming Powell comes back, they might try him a little bit just because of his size. I think Taj Gibson might actually be the most suited to guarding him. But, you know, it's the kind of game where, you know, you're just going to have to let Boogie do what he does and then just hope the rest of the guys don't kill you.
All right, some big picture stuff now. Rose has missed six games, but
right.
how do you think he's looked when he's been healthy?
For the most part, he's looked pretty good, except for he had the game against Milwaukee where he played, and he clearly wasn't at 100%, and he even said that after the game. And in that game, he was kind of taking a lot of jump shots and not really driving as much. But for the most part, when he's actually played, he's looked pretty explosive. He's missed a lot of shots that he's going to make once he gets his rhythm back, but I feel like he's done a good job of just being able to get wherever he wants to get on the floor. He's actually been pretty good defensively. He's been good as a playmaker. When he's played, he's been really good.
Now, I know you're not a doctor or anything, so it's almost unfair to ask you this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Are you worried about all these little nicks and dings he's had, or is it something you think they're just playing it smart and bringing him along slow?
I'm generally an optimist with Derrick Rose. I think he'll be fine. And you know, with all this other stuff, like, it's not like he's just missing games that he could be playing. And he has, like, he had two sprained ankles. You shouldn't play when you have two sprained ankles. And now he's got a hamstring strain, which has kept him out the last couple of games. So, like, he's gonna have those issues. And, you know, if it was like Tony Snell, would be inactive if he had a hamstring strain. Like, this just kind of goes like that for anybody. Just because it's Derrick Rose, it gets kind of blown out of proportion. Like, oh, he can't stay healthy, he can't stay on the floor. These are all minor things, and these are also the kind of things that he got hurt the last couple of times because he was trying to play through. So I definitely think it's smart what they're doing with him to just kind of hold him out in these games in November, because these games don't really mean anything. They're playing a lot of teams right now that they could probably beat without him, and they have been.
Yeah, when you're 8-3 and you have championship aspirations, it's kind of smart to rest your best player and not let the injuries accumulate. It's kind of weird that this has all become a big deal. But we don't need to talk about any of that. Bob Vulgaris had an interesting tweet about Thibodeau and his minutes. They have Jimmy Butler currently playing 40 minutes a game. He basically said that the Bulls cannot win a championship playing guys the way they do. Do you agree with that?
I do, but on the other side of it, though, like, Thibodeau has actually done a pretty good job of keeping Joakim Noah to 30 minutes a game while he's been recovering from his knee surgery. He's still on this minutes limit. And Gasol has been in, like, the low to mid-30s. But the thing about the Jimmy Butler thing, yeah, I get where the frustration comes from with a lot of people, but it's like, what options does he have, especially with Rose out a lot of these games? He doesn't trust Tony Snell at all. It's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to play Kirk Heinrich that many minutes? He's not as good as Jimmy Butler, so it's like his hands are really tied. I'm sure Thibodeau would love to not play Jimmy Butler 40 minutes a game, but he kind of has to.
Yeah, when the Clippers went on that run and they went up, I think it was like 38-28, a bunch of that happened in those minutes that Butler's on the court. And I'm looking, you know what, you do make a good point. Gasol's only playing 34 a night, Noah's at 31, Gibson's at 29, Rose is at 28, so outside of Butler, he really hasn't been that absurd with the minutes distribution this year.
Right, and that's because they actually have a bench this year. They have, you know, Aaron Brooks that they can bring off the bench, and he can actually score some. They've been trying to give Mirotić and McDermott a little bit more time, so they have options. Tony Snell is kind of the odd man out in this rotation so far, but I think the difference between this year and the last couple of years is that they actually have guys, so they don't have to just ride their starters all the time.
All right, Butler, if we were doing like early season most improved player, he'd be in the mix. He's shooting slightly over 70% at the rim, the best he has in his career. Is it that he's a better finisher, unsustainable, or is the Bulls' improved offense creating better looks for him?
I think it's a to keep in mind with Jimmy is that he had a turf toe injury all of last year, which is kind of, because he had a really great year shooting the ball in 2012-13, and then he took a huge step back last year, and he was actually really one of the worst offensive wing players in the league, to be honest with you. But he had that injury the whole year, which, and when you have a toe injury like that, that can, you know, mess with your form as a shooter, and it seems like that's all better now. So I think a part of his improvement on the offensive end is due to that. But, you know, suffice to say, yeah, I agree with you. He's in the conversation for most improved player, and he's also, they're going to have to pay a lot more to get him to come back than they would have had to pay to extend him. I'll just say that.
Is there something, too, because we're seeing it in Utah with Gordon Hayward and now Butler in Chicago, these guys who had to play an expanded role and kind of get out of their comfort zone for basically a full season because of the situation of the roster. Then now the next year, they're looking much better when they don't have as much on their plate, but had those skills that they worked on the prior season. Is that something that you think helped guys like that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. And, you know, you also look at a guy like Reggie Jackson, like he's having to do a lot with Durant and Westbrook out now in Oklahoma City. And, you know, there are times like he's kind of struggling a little bit and he's taking too many shots. But then once those guys come back, I think he's going to be a lot more comfortable in their roles the same way. And I think the same thing can be said of Jimmy Butler.
How is Gasol fit in so far?
Oh, he's been terrific. And I was actually, at first I was a little bit worried, like during the preseason, because he didn't look that good. But then it was just the kind of thing where, like, what reason does Pau Gasol have to try during the preseason? But he's been terrific. He's just a great fit. He's another guy that can, he's another guy that can score. You know, he's another guy that you kind of have to double team alongside Rose. And he's also almost as good of a passer as Joakim Noah. So between them, they probably have the best passing front court in the entire league. So there's just a lot of different things you can do with him. He can play both front court positions. You know, having a legit 7-footer, because Noah's only 6'11", and like last year they had Carlos Boozer as their starting power forward. So Gasol is definitely an upgrade there. But having just his size, he's averaging the most blocks per game of his career. So he's actually been a little bit of a better rim protector than maybe we thought he was going to be. So just having like someone who's actually 7 feet tall and is that skilled offensively has been a huge advantage for them.
Have when knowing Gasol played together, is the interior passing as good as one would expect as you watch them on a nightly basis?
Yeah, they are both great passers. They both are really good at finding guys out on the perimeter. And even like to each other, they have some plays where like one of them will find the other one in the paint or like make an entry pass. And there's just a lot of different things they can do with that.
Has the improved offense mainly just been an increase in talent, or are they doing anything different schematically?
It's really just an increase in talent, and even though he's only played in about half the game so far, just having Derrick Rose there is a huge thing. And then last year they also just have more talent. Last year, once Derrick went down, they had absolutely nobody who could create their own shot, and so now they have Aaron Brooks that they can put in, and they have Mirotić, who's been playing well lately. And then, you know, even a guy like Gasol, if they want to do what they did while Rose was out and run a lot of the offense through Noah, now they have two of those kind of playmaking big men who are really versatile they can go through. So if one of them isn't having a good night, the other one can kind of take up the slack.
All right, so you have the two kids now, Mirotić and McDermott. What are your initial thoughts on them through 11 games?
Well, originally, when we were going into the season, I thought that McDermott was going to be great right away and Mirotić was going to take some time to come along, but it's really been the opposite so far. Mirotić, when he's played, he's had a couple of bad games, but for the most part, when he's played, he's looked really good, and he can shoot. I think his problem is that he passes up a lot of shots that he should take. Like, he'll pump fake and then just dribble when he should just take an open three when he has it, because he can shoot that. And, you know, the Bulls have never really had a big man who can shoot threes like that, so once he actually gets more comfortable in the offense, he's going to be a really good player. McDermott is... he's missing a lot of open shots, and I think that's going to come back around at some point because he was such a good shooter in college. There's no way that that's not going to translate to some degree, but he's been really lost out there, and he also just is not comfortable defensively, and he's been pulled from games. We would get pulled from games because he blew a defensive rotation, and you know how Thibodeau is. He's not going to let guys off easy if they don't play defense, and so McDermott is, there's a little bit more of a learning curve for him, so he's been a little bit more of a struggle to get going than Mirotić has, but I think they're both going to be good players.
So with this front court, you got Gasol, Noah, Gibson, Mirotić. What are the pairings that you've liked so far? Where do you think they've had success with the different combinations they could choose?
Well, the Gasol Noah unit is really successful, and then obviously Gibson and Noah have played a lot together in the past, so they're really good together. Gibson has gotten a lot better offensively over the last couple of years. They both can kind of shoot that mid-range shot as well as finish out on the rim, and they're both terrific defenders. So that's basically their end of games unit. I would like to see Mirotić and Gasol together a little bit more. We haven't really seen that so far, but I think that's probably going to happen once Mirotić gets Thibodeau's confidence enough to get more minutes.
Kirk Heinrich's a guy who catches a lot of heat, I see on Twitter, from Bulls fans at times. How have you judged his play so far this year? I see he's shooting almost 40% from three.
He's been fine. I think a lot of Bulls fans don't like him because he kind of takes a lot of really bad shots. And he'll take a lot of long twos, and it's just kind of, it's just the kind of thing where, you have a guy like that who's okay, but he's just kind of mediocre, and so when he's on the team for so long, and I think a lot of it is also just that Thibodeau loves him, and he just, every little joke that you want to make about, like, every cliche about, oh, he's got the grit and the toughness and, like, all that stuff, that's kind of why there's a lot of backlash to him, but it's not an awful thing when he's on the court. He's certainly, in an ideal world, he should be starting games like he is now, but he's kind of had to out of necessity because Rose has been out. But in an ideal world, he's going to be in the second unit. He's going to be sort of controlling the second unit. He's still a decent enough defender. And like you said, he's shooting pretty well from three-point range. I don't know how long that's going to last, but, he can shoot that shot. He has shot that in the past. So I'm pretty neutral to pro Kirk Heinrich, I would say.
Worried about the defensive rebounding, or you think that's something that'll even out over time?
That's going to come around. The talent is too good. The defensive scheme is too much of a proven thing. I'm not too worried about that in the long run. And it's actually been better the last couple of games, too. against the Pacers, and then against the, well, against the Pistons, against the Pacers, and against the Clippers, the rebounding has been a lot better than it was before that. So it's already kind of starting to even out a little bit.
All right, we'll finish off with this very important note. What happened in Cameron Barstow's 4 minutes that he has a negative 120 net rating?
He's only played 4 minutes.
That's on NBA.com. They only have 4 minutes and a negative 120 net rating. 119.7, if I'm down, I want to give him the extra three.
What game was it in? Was he, that was the season opener against the Knicks, right? Because I feel like he, like, I don't know. Cameron Barstow, I don't think he's going to play at all this year. Even Thibodeau has said he's probably not going to play. He might be good at some point. I don't think they're really expecting to get anything out of him. And that's funny, though, that he has that bad of a rating.
Yeah, that's, I had no expectation of you actually knowing what happened in the
I don't even know what game he played his 4 minutes in. Was it the, it was either the Knicks game or, what was their other blowout that they had? They had one or other just complete blowout.
Hold on 1 second. I can let you know that. I got,
I'm pretty sure it was the Knicks game that he played a few minutes in.
Let's see. Let's check the box score of.
Or no, it might have been the Magic.
All right, hold on. We got the Knicks game. I got the Knicks game up. If it's not there, it was. He played 3 minutes and 31 seconds in the Knicks game. How do you get? And it, he was only a minus seven, but it was such a small time. It must have hurt the net rating that much. I was just like, I saw 120. I was like, whoa, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, what are you like? Just out of it, since I don't have it in front of me, what is Etuan Moore's defensive rating? Because he's also a guy that's only played like a handful of minutes, and he basically gets like a 3 trillion every time he plays as his line.
I don't have the, if you give me 1 sec, his was really bad. Also, it was like but it wasn't as bad as Barstow's. It was like a negative 150, I want to say. But as I bring it up, on off. Etuan Moore was only a negative 56.7. So,
that's not terrible.
No, Barstow's doubled him up. So I think they should just not play Barstow the rest of the season. So he ends at that.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a, like, if Nolan Smith was still in the league, I used to cover the Blazers a lot. Nolan Smith's PER was like negative 8 1 year.
Anything bad that happens to Duke, I am a fan of. Oh, well, there goes the dogs. All right, well, since my dogs are barking, I was going to ask you one more question, but they're not going to stop, so we'll just wrap this up. Sean, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, that wraps up another edition of the Podium Gate Podcast.